So you shouldn't be texting while he's driving. He's texting Mike. It is not. All right, well, we'll start without. And Chelsea's so I. Is she in?
Can you hear us okay, Chelsea?
Everything?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I'll call to order the work session for City of Ramsey Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. We'll go straight to case one, request for feedback, preliminary development proposals for parcel 46. Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Acting Mayor Riley. This case comes to you this evening based on our discussion at the past work session. A little background, we're pretty short on time here. We've had some inquiries over the past 5 years about parcel 46. They've all gone nowhere based on the fact that there were too many unknowns with that particular piece of land. We've done the analysis now. We've kind of satisfied for most of those unknowns, which makes it more realistic to solicit development proposals. The wetlands have been delineated, the waterfront, kind of the plan to dig it out and place the dirt on site. We've shared those results with the developers that have expressed interest and provided them with a base map. And we've asked the developers to provide some development concepts. So at this time, staff and the developers are going to be looking for feedback on the proposals that I'm going to run through very briefly this evening. This is the baseline information that I did provide. And this is a map that we shared last work session when we talked about the core study. Essentially highlights, I'll call them the problem wetlands and the ones that aren't so much of a problem. It also pencils in the location of the hotel to see how developments might work with each other. There are four development proposal types that we're going to look at this evening. One is a mix of housing and retail in the north 23 acres. Housing only in the north 23 acres, market rate apartment project north of the hotel, and a large format retail project in concept in the north 23 acres. First project here, we'll call it Capstone 2. Just the general layout of it. You have a couple options for trails to run through this. It could run along the wetland on the west side and then cruise on over to Zeolite Street, connect up with the waterfront. That level of detail is something, you know, we can work through in the planning commission if it gets to that stage. But wanted to show this concept here, also retaining about 3 acres of retail property on that.
Can you let Bruce in?
Can you let him in, or I got to go? You got it? Okay. So, yeah, this is the general concept. So, some highlights. This particular development, this is 137 units, two-story attached for-sale townhomes. Develops about 18 acres. This concept here is filling Wetland 2, which is kind of that pond wetland, and part of Wetland 1, which is more the historical wetland, and moving the pond to accommodate for development. 3 acres are retained by the city for retail development. Unit sizes are 1,500 to 1,800. 3 bedrooms, 3 baths. Price point between $300 and $335. And the developer has indicated they want to do some enhanced architecture along Bunker Lake Boulevard. I do want to note this project does not meet core design standards as proposed. Our planning staff has talked with the developer about that. And if we can get more into that proposal, the developer might be able to speak a little bit to that. Second one, same layout here. Unfortunately, for Centra, there were some items that they had problems with the information that we gave them, and they were unable to kind of get the plan on the exact same template. But this outlines, generally speaking, what they're looking at. They went through the first iteration here, assuming that they would be able to solve for all of the wetlands. Based on what we know with these wetlands, I think that could be a challenge. To actually solve for all of them, but in this scenario, that's what we're running numbers on. I will say that we were provided information from Capstone in the event that they could use the entire site too, and that's what I handed out for you, the area highlighted in red as if they could totally develop the site just as Centra is proposing to do. Highlights in this development, less units, 124. They are a detached for-sale townhome. They utilize about 20.7 acres for housing, Again, carve out that 3 acres for retail for the city. They propose to, again, fill all of the wetlands and salt for the pond. The units are a little larger, 3 to 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, higher price point. And generally speaking, this project, as presented, meets core design standards. Next proposal, second one by Capstone. This does not include the retail component. As you can see, it is replaced with housing. Bumps the units up to a little discrepancy here. The narrative says 168, but if you look at the plans, it says 162. It's probably somewhere in between. But again, 20 acres developed for housing. Again, concept, you know, filling in part of the wetlands, leaving some of that component there. Typically, I'm going to go back to this. One of the iterations has a trail kind of running between that wetland and those townhomes on the west side, and then coming down along the bottom as a potential way to run that through, which I think is a really good connection.
How much of the wetland is used up in that one? It looks like a lot's staying.
Yeah, it's about 3 or so acres that don't get used in that area, and you have that, and you have that pond, which, again, has been moved in this iteration. Again, price point's the same, just more units. Same thing with Centra here, essentially getting rid of the retail, unit counts go up. Next one to look at, and I'm going through these quick, I figure we can get them all at the end, is a market rate apartment concept. There is 2 concepts that are put forth. They both are 150 units in 5-story buildings. So I'll go through this first one. This first iteration here has retail along kind of across from what the Aldi site is going to be, right along the sidewalk there, so street facing. There's indoor pool, lots of amenities. I didn't put all those in the case, but they're in the packet. So it's a higher end market rate apartment here with this layout. Second layout, just a different iteration, same units. Potentially, if there's one that you know the council likes better than the other one, but they just wanted to show that, you know, they have some flexibility on the site and how they could do it. Sorry, I'm a little fast there. So with the 150 unit market rate apartment, again, 2 concepts. These have studios, 1 bedroom, 2 bedrooms, and 3 bedroom units. This concept, because it is market rate, in order to do that, you really need to add some amenities to it. And if there were some pretty nice amenities, but of course there's going to be a substantial amount of heated underground parking. Within that 5,000 square foot retail space, looking at something like a Dunkin's, a Jimmy John's, a donut shop, coffee shop, something along those lines. If you had an opportunity to look through the packet and look at the Norhart corner feature, it's very, very high end, very sharp. So if you are going to be coming into this area, it's going to look very nice. And again, I won't get into it, but lots of building unit and exterior amenities for this particular project. Large format retail, this was back when the original plan was put together back in 2005, and it's morphed a lot of times, but it is worth talking about this evening. I did receive a call from Brian from CBRE, and there is a large format retailer who is unnamed at this point that is just looking around and did visit the site. So I felt that I needed to share that. We don't have any additional information at this time on who it might be. Typically, when you're looking at the large format retailers, you're looking at the Walmarts, the Targets, the Menards, the Mills, Hy-Vee, those types of users. But at this point, we don't know who it is. So what I said is, I said, well, you know, and I put it in there on the kind of the tax estimate, you know, looking at 15 to 20 acres, likely room for another smaller building. This site, due to the wetlands, if they're unable to really kind of be taken all the way out, I think there's going to be some challenges from a visibility standpoint for big box retail here, as well as some access issues because the JPA doesn't allow us to go on to Armstrong Boulevard. The only access points we can have are at that roundabout, and then potentially one on the north side on Bunker Lake. And even with that, the JPA says that they really don't want one. But in some discussions with the county, I think we likely could get maybe one between there and Center Street. But it would probably be a right-in, right-out, and not be full access. Some questions to think about here, and this is more from a staff perspective. Does the retailer matter? I think the answer is absolutely who that retailer might be. And then second, is there certain retailers that are worth holding out for if we want to talk more about that now we're at the end, we bundled it all up.
How recently was that discussion?
Last week. So, in a nutshell, I think these are four important components that if we can get through these this evening, that'll help me out immensely as staff, and certainly the developers here as well, as to, you know, are there some proposals that we like? We want to dive in a little bit deeper, explore them any further, and as such, maybe providing some feedback to the developers. Understand that, you know, this process normally goes through Planning Commission, but this is such an important parcel to our development. I didn't want to go through all of that and then have a community council if there's something that is just going to be dead on arrival. Another item is to potentially revisit the pause on apartments on city land. And I bring that up. I think the last time we talked about this was when we were looking at Greenway Terrace. And there was a lot of discussion at that point in time on wanting to have a little bit of the retail to catch up. That wasn't the only discussion, but that was part of the discussion. Since that time, we have had some substantial retail investment. We've had Gigi's get done. We've had O'Reilly's get built. We've had the 15,000 square foot building that Matt put together. That is now almost full. North Star Marketplace has put up 7,200 square feet. Purchase agreement for a hotel. Obviously, purchase agreements are not projects, but purchase agreement for a hotel, Aldi, and the Core Trust Bank. So part of that discussion is, from a staff perspective, we've been kind of hands-off on working on apartment projects, wondering if maybe these recent investment is something where we can consider that on city-owned land. And then ultimately, really trying to provide us with direction on how to move to the next level. We have all of the developers that submitted proposals here. I've said that we're not going to have them present, but they're here to answer any questions regarding their proposals that you might have. The information that I did pass out, for those that are online watching, the only difference between what I passed out and what you have in your packet was the information I received from Capstone, just showing what taxes and development would be if they fully developed their site, and I can give that to you at a later date.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Mayor. Thanks, Sean. Great information. I don't know if we've been in this kind of situation before, but with the big box realtors, one of those things where we'll get back to within the next year? Or, I mean, is there a time frame of we know within 6 months maybe if they're interested, or they usually drag it out to be, you know, well, or do you have any ideas how long typically?
Good. Thank you. The answer is CBR knows, and they're very in tune with this development, and they know we've had a lot of interest on this site, so they understand that we don't want to wait forever on that answer. So I've been told that within the next week or so, next couple of weeks, we likely could at least know who it might be. But, you know, then that kind of backstage on how long is it going to take? Is it something they do have interest? Going through entitlements with a bigger box like that is going to take a lot more time. Which goes back to the question of, you know, who is it? So, like, for example, let's just say, this isn't a bad Pomida. Thing, but let's say it's a Pomida, and, you know, we're thinking, nah, we just don't want a Pomida. We're okay with that not happening. That helps us move along with potentially some of these other projects in the area. So
Big Box has had 10 years to look at that corner, and then it comes when we're about to have this discussion.
You know, Chris, when I get on the council, you know, I bring the numbers.
Well, again, a Big Box looking, it's my understanding we were trying to solicit an investment in the past, and we didn't get that far on that, but yeah. And just so you're aware, the information that I did provide to the developers in regards to the wetlands and such, I also gave to Brian, and he shared that with the Big Box developer, too, so that they can look at that. So they may find out that it's something they don't even want to pursue based on that.
All right.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. With regards, I'm going to kind of stay on that same topic with my question. With the Big Box retailer, is that the only area that they are interested in, and does zoning allow for other areas, say, across Highway 10 for that type of potential as well? I mean, here on this side, too, but I'm just asking for that clarification.
Acting Mayor Councilmember Musgrove. I don't know the other sites that they are looking at, but to your second point, the area west of Armstrong would also be zoned for that type of use, and the area commonly known as the Diamond site or the Hope Fellowship site would also be zoned appropriately for that type of use. So there are other areas in the city that if it doesn't go here, it could go other places.
And I ask that question because of the wetland. I'd hate for them to come in and want to get in a square footage area and then they can't because of the wetland mitigation. So they may be thinking about that as well since they have that information. You already talked about the, if I may, Acting Mayor, go on with a couple more questions. You already talked about the entrance restrictions for the for that retail site. But can you go back to the picture with the market rate apartments?
Yep.
And how the retail entrance on that one was going to be accessed?
All right. So under this one right here, you see my cursor, right? Yeah. So there is an access right here. So this is an access. There's an existing curb cut that's already here right now. So this would be a shared access for the hotel. It would come in right off of Sunwood right here. You're looking at about 5,000 square foot of space, so it's not a huge space. So we anticipate, you know, there could be people that are walking to this or parking there. You can see this iteration. There is some, looks like they're giving in some specific parking here on the corner, but inevitably there's going to be likely folks parking over here, I would imagine, during high times. So again, here's the second one right here. This one is more set up. It doesn't have dedicated parking, but one would think that these areas right here would be where people would be parking there.
And Sean, would that be the only, I mean, it looks like they could then come in from the street there too, I was not on that access or
Sorry, what's that?
They could have access off of that street there. It's
here?
It's not Ramsey Parkway, but what's the one that's coming down?
Oh, Zeolite?
Zeolite.
Yep. Absolutely. Yes.
Indirectly?
Yep.
Okay. And then in the other iteration?
Yep.
The same area. Okay. All right. I guess I missed that when you were presenting it, so I appreciate
Sorry.
That. No, that's okay. With this one, my concern for them beginning a project and then not having to be able to resolve the wetlands would not be another consideration for that development as well. Yes.
This one right here, one more. There we go. This project, here's hotel, and here is the apartment project. There are no wetlands in that area. So the only thing they would need to do is bring in dirt to get the site up to what they need. So they don't have any wetland issues on this site.
Mayor, your hand's up.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. John, can you tell me, I know you got some tax information there. What's the difference if we were to do residential versus maybe the mixed use between commercial and residential in the apartment there? How does our taxes look to the city?
I'm not sure which question and which location, Mayor. Which location?
I think it means the mix retail versus just all housing in the corner 46.
Yes. Right.
Oh.
The mix with the one with the next retail on it.
What's the difference in taxes? Is the question?
Yeah, to the city.
Oh, well, all right, so on the summary of the development proposals, generally speaking, Capstone 1 project, which is all units, no retail, that one would bring in about, just the city piece, about $457,000, assuming, well, hold on, let's not do let's do the full development just so we can do apples to apples. Let's say we could fill all the wetlands in, because that's the proposal that Centra gave us. It'd be about $450,000 annually upon full build-out for that. If you move it over to the retail component, where you end up reducing the units significantly, you know, you're looking at about $400,000. So about $50,000 difference for that development. Centra, on the other hand, is about $430,000 on the one that's mixed with retail, is 360 with the mixed with retail, and then 429 if it's all housing. So it might be surprising, but the ones that are all houses actually generate more taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Mayor. So to answer some of the questions you have on there, I personally would still be supportive of a pause on the apartments. I think we have a good number here, and we can look at some other development options that we have. So that's my opinion on that. You know, when I look at these, I kind of looked over ahead of time, you know, these projects. I do like the reserved retail, the Central Homes 1 or the Capstone 2. You know, those are the ones kind of stand out to me as nice fits for that area, nice fits for the city. You know, obviously, we need more details and things, but high level on that. So I guess I would kind of look at one of those two, and I would personally not want to see more apartments.
Also, we're kind of running short on time today. Let's maybe hit our developers if we have questions for them. They didn't present, but we have questions. So I guess my question kind of to Capstone and Centra, it seems like you had different assumptions about the wetlands. So maybe if you could talk about that. I mean, if you're going to work with the wetlands, like Capstone kind of had the idea, or pave it all over, build all the way over the whole thing, like Central. Could you maybe just talk about that? I don't care who it goes first.
Well, based on, I was at the workshop, Councilmember Riley and the rest of the team, I was at the previous workshop and learned the cost of the wetlands, and we had some discussion about what would enable us to impact or mitigate the difficult wetlands. And based on our development at Capstone, usually it's difficult to put housing on wetlands that need to be mitigated. And so because of the proximity of the roundabout, we basically utilized or impacted the wetlands where roads would need to go, and we reserved the remainder. We also learned that pond along Armstrong is part of the county road storm system and would need to remain. We learned that from talking to Mr. Westby. So those are the considerations that we made, and that's why we decided to leave the wetlands in there. The third thing is that if all of the wetlands are impacted, your study showed it's $1.2 million. That's a huge hit to whoever bears that burden. So that's the third reason why we chose to design the way we did around them as much as possible.
Okay. And then just add on to point number one, I don't think it would be approved by the watershed. They would need to approve all those wet impacts, and that's what Heather was saying, is we don't even think we can get that approved. So if we could get it approved, maybe we could impact more. But,
all right. Well, we know somebody. So.
I think everything you've said is accurate. It'll really come down to economics. Part of your challenge is you've got previously mitigated wetlands on here, so you're now doing it again, and that creates challenges. And so it really is going to come down to economics. And so I think for the city, it's going to, you know, you can do just about anything you want, but what's it going to cost? And ultimately, what the city's going to recover on the cost by this is going to be affected by those economics. And so I think in large part, it's going to be, what is the goal of the city? You know, if it's, we want to fill this up with retail or housing at any cost, then that's one approach. If it's, we want to be as economical as we can, and we're okay giving up some of the land, that's going to be a different approach. And so I think it really just comes down, everything was said is absolutely accurate, and it just comes down to the economics. Is it worth getting rid of the wetlands for in excess of $1 million potentially, or is it worth not having the density?
I guess I had an apartment question then too. Just have you done studies? Is what need there is in Ramsey or the immediate area? Can you speak to that?
We haven't done an exact study for the area, but we have looked at the vacancy rates, and they are showing that they're low. And so, knowing that the the existing apartments are filled, there could be a need, or there is a need for additional ones. It's, they're not vacant, let's put it that way. They're not, you know, sitting empty. So that's kind of where we did our assessment on that preliminary.
Respect.
I'll quickly end with this. Well, I would be interested in a short-term pause just to hear what the realtor, if they're interested in what the company might be. And, you know, I wouldn't want to wait a year and nothing happens, but I think a given period of time, yeah, it would be good information. So,
anybody have any other questions for the developers or their ideas while we have them here?
I don't have a question. I have a comment. I did see the apartments in there, and I physically have been at one of them, and they are very nice apartments, the ones in Lionel Lakes. So I'm kind of open to that project because it is on a different spot than this portion of where we have the two other developers wanting to come in. So I would guess I would like a little bit more information about what the need would be for you know, the apartments in the city as part of the discussion on if you'd want to bring that project forward at this time. That if that helps attract more, as well as it's a high-end apartment, they're very nice apartments. I think that may help us in our decision making for that project.
Ms. Howell?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, I guess I would agree with Council Member Specht. I would be curious about just putting a pause on things and finding out more about the big box retailer and just see if we can bring more retail into the space.
All right. Thank you.
What else are you looking for us?
Well, at this point, I have a number of comments. So first would be, I guess, if I get the name of a retailer, how do we address that and know if it's somebody we want to work with? What would that process be?
You'll let us know the name, and then we'll let you know if we're interested.
Is that a work session? Is that a... No. But I'm just trying to figure out what, because in fairness, I mean, we're looking at, you know, we have two developers that have really expressed interest to move forward, and they need to kind of move to that next stage. And I anticipate, again, in a week or so, maybe 2 weeks, I should know what that is. Is it given a month, and if we can't get it in a month, we just move on? Is it, I mean, what type of a timeline, for whatever reason, this tends to drag out?
Well, we've got developers that have been waiting now for several months, so I'm not personally real interested in having anybody wait for this. I jokingly said, but I mean, it's been, we'll just say 10 years, it's really more than that, that they haven't been interested in coming, and then, so now we're looking at holding up potential other plans for something that we've been holding up for years, so I personally am not real interested in that. You pointed out there's other places, and I think that's what I would more be interested in is we've already heard the challenges of this position, this spot, and I think we have other places that would actually be better candidates.
And the big box, we may wait a month, hear who the big box person is. They may move forward, and they might not be able to build because they can't mitigate that wetland. And I would rather not wait for that, especially if there are other areas that are close by where they definitely can locate. If they're that interested, I think there are other opportunities.
Mayor Kuzma?
I agree. I think we should move forward with the project and not wait for the whoever the big box is. It's been, like you said, 10 years. And, you know, if they were interested, they could reveal themselves. But I say we move forward, not wait.
All right. And then I guess it hasn't been exactly asked, but as far as the the building plan. I like the idea of working around the wetlands. I think one way or another, the city is going to be bearing that cost, and I'm concerned, and that's a lot. And I like working around it and maybe just building it in as a natural feature.
So what I have up on the screen here, even the capstone iterations get rid of wetland too. So that wetland under all the iterations go away. So just so leave the natural area, wetland one, and then that pond can be moved. That's not a big deal. But that's helpful feedback to the developers.
Right. I mean, I'm saying like as an idea or whatever. I personally, any thoughts on that, I guess?
I agree, Acting Mayor. I think that we've learned that mitigation for number two is going to be more possible, if I'm understanding correctly, than one. And one, I think, is in their diagram or in a diagram that we saw that has that accounted for.
Second.
I agree. I think that's kind of, a business decision somewhat for the developers as well. If they think they could get that done and they want to pay that extra million. But I think I like the two, again, with the reserve retail, Capstone 2, Central 1. It's not like a deal breaker for me, but I like that idea. If we can have more of the retail there in the houses.
So maybe a question for developers again here. If we reserve the part for commercial development and in another 10 years it still isn't there, how easily can that be built on residential? Or is it precluded then?
Which portion are you referring to?
Red.
Yeah.
Do we need to decide up front or, how easily could it be built later as homes if it never develops as retail?
One concern that we have about the red is that it would be very difficult for it to share an access point with the residential. We have for sale residential housing in here, and if it is any sort of retail, that's not a great entrance for the neighborhood either, which is a consideration. So I think that's just something that needs to be discussed. I don't know. We'd have to look into that further, get creative, if you have all that commercial traffic driving in. But other than that, I would say it could certainly wait.
That's a good point, too, man.
Okay.
I need to start talking first so I don't keep saying I agree.
No, absolutely. I'm opening it up. So.
All right, you each could have the home. Every other home is.
And as we talked about, I'm just going to kind of say the apartment discussion is actually almost separate from this. It's a separate location, and it's more of a do we want apartments yet or not? So that's a separate discussion kind of from how we like the idea of the layout and retail.
I agree.
Okay.
So we're suddenly with.
So if we've used our allotted time, at this point, do we need to cover something else, aside from us actually making a decision?
Acting Mayor, I think I have almost all of the, direction that I need. The only one that I think is still a bit up in the air is the apartment question. Is that something that comes back to a subsequent work session to be discussed as a single topic?
I think that's a bigger topic than right now in just a few minutes.
Yep. Okay. So other than that, the one question I would ask is, it's very possible I could hear within a week or so on that large format retailer, and if it happens to be one that everybody would like, I do think we at least
can you email it out? Is that
yeah?
As long as we don't reply,
we'll find a way to get it communicated.
Yep, but I can let them know that if they're going to play games, that they're just going to miss the boat on the site.
Okay.
But we have other ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and we have Bill.
Yeah, we've had a few that have indicated that's what they'd like to do. I don't necessarily love that, but I mean, if it's a week or whatever, I can live with that. Or, but I wouldn't want to be holding our plans up for hoping.
Okay. That's all I have.
All right. Are we kind of good with that direction for now? And I guess last chance here, do you guys have specific questions for us? I mean, we are working on this, and we appreciate the ideas that you guys sent. I guess I'm just open it up for a closing comment or a closing question or something.
Now you're going to let me speak first. I think it's going to come down to dollars and cents for the city and how it works out. And whether it's Centra or Capstone, Capstone's a fantastic builder, and I think the city's well served with either one of us, quite frankly. And so I think it'll come down to, you know, how do you work the economics of it, the wetlands, you know, if you want to minimize the wetland impact, have some of those discussions. But what I saw was Capstone, and well, as a citizen of this city, the city's well served either way, I believe.
We agree with that. known them for a long time. They're good builders. So, and yet, you know, we love the attached townhome product that we have created for this project. And luckily, Dale does not have an attached product, so it's kind of a difference of which product you think fits the best.
We won't tell them about the stuff we're building a quarter mile from here.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Do you have anything that you want to ask or get direction from us?
No, I guess I'm just looking for more direction of when you would know if you wanted to release the hold on
pause.
More, yeah, the pause on more apartments. If the need is identified, our apartments are, like you said, you've seen, they're beautiful. They're luxurious. They're high end. Great amenities. This would be a smaller one for us with 150 units, and love to be here. So, anything we can provide to help with the decision.
Mr. Hagan, do you have an idea when we may work this into a work session?
No, but we can make it work. We're getting into a busy season with budget around the corner, but I think our April and May work sessions are more open. But, you know, as far as development review and things of that nature, you know, the reality is we're into next year, and we wouldn't want to slow it down any further than shovels in the ground next spring. So, you know, it might take a little bit to get there, but we'll make it work for work session schedules.
Guys, meet afterwards, too, if we have to.
Reconvene.
So,
timing-wise,
I guess I was concerned I heard you say next year.
No, but, you know, by the time, I don't think a development is getting shovels in the ground this year.
We weren't looking for that.
So, you know, we have a little bit of time where I think over the next couple months from the apartment standpoint to have a few more conversations. We have that time. I wouldn't want to push it to September by any means. But we'll work and look at our upcoming work sessions probably within the next, I'd say by mid-May, they'll be back at the latest.
Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you all for being here. And thanks for the work you put into it. We appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Rental inspection program ordinance review. Just check. Can you hear us?
Yes. Can everybody see my screen? Yes.
Never all those here. Voices in your head aren't actually him. That was
so. Honorable Mayor, Acting Mayor, and Council Members, once again, thank you for having me today. We're here just talking about rental licensing and inspection programs. I'll try to be quick because I know we're on a short time frame here. So as we talked last work session, this came about because of the 2021-2022 strategic plan. We wanted to discuss multifamily inspections, which really encompasses single-family inspections as well, and how important that is. We see a lot of issues in single-family homes, almost as much as we do in multifamily properties. And I work tirelessly with police officers, firefighters, to make sure that these properties are brought into compliance, whether it's exterior code violations or interior nuisance complaints. So as we go through that, some of the key points of this ordinance adoption, what we're looking for, is the mandatory crime-free housing program. And we set it up, and I wrote it so that we get discounts as you progress through those phases of that crime-free housing program, which is something the police department supports. You get a reduced licensing fee. You get reduced inspection schedules. So the greater of time that you put into your properties, the less you have to deal with kind of the city fees and the city inspections. And that kind of follows with the maintenance inspections being in line with the phases of the crime-free housing program. And this would help solidify enforcement of problem properties, but yet still benefiting all of the active players in a rental property. Landlords receive benefits, the tenants and occupants and the residents that live there receive the benefits, as well as we as a city. You know, with this gives an opportunity for the landlords to enter those properties without necessarily being a nuisance to those tenants, because we have to do inspections and those landlords can see what the properties are, how they're being taken care of, and kind of what's going on in the conditions of those properties. And it ensures that they're safe places to live. It really helps reduce landlord and tenant conflicts, and it reduces complaints so that landlords aren't actually getting phone calls from me regarding the code enforcement violations. Now, we look at the tenant benefits, and it provides assurances that the homes are safe and the opportunity to get the corrections done without having to make a formal complaint, so they don't have to fear retaliation. And it provides some lease requirements for the landlord, so that it helps resolve some of these police calls about landlord-tenant disputes. And the big question, really where the rubber meets the road, is the cost to the taxpayer. What's the taxpayer going to pay? Now, currently, as we see it, as an inspector, I'm going to all of these rental properties and inspecting them without having a licensing program, really. We don't have an inspection program. We're charging minimal fees, and I could spend countless hours working with these residents and these property owners to bring these issues into compliance. Now, when we look at this, I made a quick reference here of several...
Stop screen sharing and reading. It's not keeping up for some reason.
Okay, let's try it again here. I always have technical difficulties, so I apologize. I lost that page here. Let's end. And then we're going to share screen again. Entire screen. Okay. I apologize again. It is not allowing me to share now. Well, of course, technical difficulties for me.
Well, we do have it attached to the case, so yeah, you want to tell us what page you're on, we need to follow along.
Sure, there. Absolutely.
Page 8.
Yep, so we're on page 8 here. So if you take a look at page 8, it kind of does a cost breakdown of what we're charging, kind of what current cities are charging that surround us. Kind of breaks down from the least expensive to the most expensive. We charge $25 every 3 years for a single family inspection. Andover is the next lowest at $50 every year, but they only drive by the house and they just take a look at it from the road as they go by. And some of the higher issues as you go down, the numbers get larger and larger. One of the interesting facts is that the cities from Andover, Moundsview, Elk River, Fridley, Champlin, Coon Rapids, Cottage Grove, St. Louis Park, when I contacted all of the representatives and inspection staff of those cities, their fees don't actually cover the cost of their inspection program, and every single one of them is looking at changing their fee structures. They don't have a time frame of how fast they're looking at doing it. Andover's looking at within the next year because they have market rate apartment buildings coming forward. But all of the cities between what our current price is and what the proposed price is, they're all looking at adjusting their fees. So when I looked at that, I set up the proposed fee as what we're thinking of charging for single family, multifamily rentals. Now, fees can always be adjusted with annual fee changes and fee schedule changes. But this is just kind of a rough look at what we're looking at charging. Now, this ultimately covers, if we go to page 9, it talks about 80% of these city surveys reported that the fees don't cover the costs, and 20% of those fees were in excess of $400 for single-family homes. Slide 10 then talks about multifamilies in the community surveyed. It ranged from $55 to $925 plus per unit fees. Now, as we get back to what the fees mean for the city, currently our proposal is saying $300 for a single-family rental annually and $600 plus $25 per unit for a multifamily. The estimated revenue of that would be $182,000 roughly a year. And currently we're providing the same services essentially today for $17,703 every 3 years or $5,900 a year. Now if we get to slide 12, that talks about what the potential expenses are for an inspection program. And this is an inspection program that covers multifamily properties, single family properties, anything that holds a rental license, Airbnbs and so forth, with that rough cost of an inspector salary. Now, I overestimated all of these fees because I would rather tell you that the fee might be a little higher and actually cost less than have it underestimated, because I don't want the taxpayers to necessarily be forced to pay for a service that we're already doing for a lot of these properties. And software that we're working on, some of these fees may not actually, we might not need to spend the money on if community development software programs work through the chain. Training and certification, not all the time training budgets are used, but just putting it in there, you know, we want inspectors to be certified in the International Property Maintenance Code, have legal issues and legal aspects training, constitutional law training, things like that that are really important when you're entering people's homes to do inspections. You know, some of the expenses that are longer time frames are things like vehicles. Now, I put in every 5 years you might need to replace a vehicle, but the reality is it's probably more like 7. So that's just a one-time expense every 7 years. And so we're looking at that estimated cost, you know, kind of for a startup is $176,000, but the proposed fees would be about $182,000. Now, none of these expenses listed here revolve around the police department or any of the fire department needs, but those really can be implemented based on what the fee schedules may be if we're looking at going forward with such a program. If we move to slide 11, and I do apologize for sharing. I just went back to down to the data. We have about 28,520 residents here. We have quite a few duplexes, triplexes, 9,925 households, and 7,500 detached single-family homes. But with that, if we get to the further data, with single-family, roughly 151 licenses of our rental licenses are owned by three businesses. 30% of our single-family rentals are owned by three people. That's a huge number. 40% of the licenses are owned by businesses. So really only 30% of these rental licenses are owned by the mom and pops, the ones that inherited a home or had a second home due to marriage. They just kind of fell into it and they're not actually operating a business. The majority of our single family rentals are operating like big businesses, like the multifamily buildings that we talk about. And with that, that ends up being problematic. You know, we talked about housing units. We have 11 active multifamily licenses, 2 assisted living facilities, 1,003 units with 500 active single family units, and that doesn't even count the 653 inactive or expired licenses for that. Now, we've talked about how inspections are really important, especially on the single family side. And in between our last work session and this work session, here's an example of a heater. I was called out to a property. And this property was owned by one of those big businesses, one of those three owners that own 30% of our property. And I mentioned that the local agent was in Roseville at the time, and this is the one where the local agent was supposedly in Roseville. A single mother of an infant child had no heat in her home, and she was afraid of being evicted, and she didn't want to call the landlord. She called me, and I talked to her, and I said, well, I can come out and do an inspection. I'll let them know that a family member stopped by, and they were concerned, and they were the ones that called me, so you don't get in trouble for this. And I went out, and this is the furnace that was unplugged, and the gas was turned off in the basement. It's an old gravity heater. Gravity heats to the top. They had electric baseboard heaters in the bedrooms and an old furnace in another addition. None of the heating appliances worked in the home, and she had an infant child kind of bundled up in blankets, and it's not good for an infant child. Well, I contacted what we had as the local representative, because we only get that information every so many years. This representative essentially laughed at me on the phone and said, it's not my problem. Email the compliance department in Houston, Texas. And I said, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. Your name's on the license. This is going to have to be resolved. I ended up calling Chicago, his boss, and ended up meeting with the representative, and we got their heat turned back on within 24 hours. And it was like pulling teeth to find the representative to address this, and that's why annual inspections of these properties and kind of keeping up with them is so crucial. We're holding them accountable for these problem properties and making sure that that tenant isn't going to go without heat. Now, problems can happen anywhere. You know, pipes can break, furnaces can go out. We all know that as being property owners that, hey, your heat might go out and you have to call an HVAC person. That's understandable. But when these calls from this tenant were left unnoticed and nobody did anything and she was in fear of being evicted, that's what forced her to call me. And we're talking temperatures that are 10 degrees. And so that's why when we went through this and we talked about it as staff, this is really, this resident of ours who is having issues, that's problematic for us. And we should really try to take the time now before we see more of these rental properties. And what's really interesting is we just had this, a meeting with developers about developing townhomes and developing in our community, and a lot of townhomes get rented out. There are several neighborhoods that have 30 rentals that are townhomes. And so this, now's the time, if we're looking at doing it, getting it squared away now, because our future development is going to see a need for it even more so. And so that's why I wanted to take the time to present before you, talk about the potential costs, how we as a city can alleviate those costs by those rental fees. And those rental fees aren't actually out of this world. I mean, they're pretty considerate to what the metropolitan area is doing right now. We're really behind the times with charging $25 every 3 years. So getting a step ahead and putting us in the right direction is really important right now. And sure, there's always a little bit of a startup cost, and there's a little bit of a hump you have to go through when you're initiating things like that. But now's the time to do that, because if we put another apartment building in, or we put another 150 townhome unit in, we're going to have another percentage of rental units coming in, and we're going to have more complaints that burden staff that could be addressed potentially proactively through these inspections. So, you know, again, the last slide, really, slide 18 was, it benefits the residents, and this is why, and I just went into that. There's a reduction of crime, reduction of code violations. They prevent, you know, landlord-tenant issues, and they really help to strengthen those landlord-tenant relationships, but also help strengthen our assessments of our housing stock. And we don't want to see our housing stock slide. You know, we have code violations. You hired a code enforcement person to, you know, fix the code violations. Now with rental properties, we see this all the time. So, you know, and again, I'm sorry, my share screen wasn't working. I just threw in a bunch of pictures from random code violations we had, which was slide 19. And then, what was that?
Brian's added a third
one. Oh, sweet. Okay, look at that. Thank you, Brian. Like I said, I apologize. I'm a technology whiz here. But what we're looking for is, you know, asking if we can bring this forth to a public hearing and have the community look at this and say, yeah, I think this is something we need. I can tell you the tenant with that infant child would have loved to just have a regular inspection. When I was there, I found broken stair railings, door panels on an old door that was original of the house that they had to duct tape closed because it was sliding down and the air was penetrating. It wasn't from intentional damage. It was just lack of maintenance. And these things get caught when you do the inspection. Now, we have really great property owners too. And the idea is to benefit them as well, giving them a reduction in fees, a reduction in inspection time. But yet, we want to make sure our housing stock stays good. And so I really want to bring this forth for a public hearing to instill this this great program into our community. And I think the police department and fire department are really on board with this and how I wrote the ordinance. I didn't add the ordinance in here, but you were given a copy of the ordinance that we wrote. I just want to say that the majority of that language was removed from other cities that have been using this consistently. We made some fine tweaks that Council Member Musgrove had made, and we have that kind of finaled out for discussion if you'd like. Like I said, most of that language was taken from agencies like Coon Rapids, St. Louis Park, and it's been enforced for a long period of time. And so I think legally it's great standing rental ordinance with the value to help our community. And so that's what I'd like to present and bring forward to a public hearing. And
I
don't
know.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Mayor. Yeah, I 100% agree. I think I really appreciate your hard work and the police and the fire, whoever else worked with you. And I love it, so.
Thank you.
Ms. Musgrove.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, Craig, thanks for putting this together and we're finally able to get a look at it. Like you said, I did bring forward some questions, but I have some additional ones.
Sure.
And I don't know if you want me to bring those forward later just for the sake of time. And then also, when can we expect to see a draft before we bring it to a public hearing?
You can have a draft as soon as next week.
Okay.
Mr. Kuzma. You're on mute. Mm-hmm. You're on mute. We can't hear you.
St. Chris is awesome. I think Chris is the best.
Got it. Sorry about that.
Oh, now we can hear you. We just can't see you.
I'm hard to move this forward. I think it's a good thing for the city.
Okay. Thank you. I guess my kind of question here. So when we were talking about the crime-free housing a month ago, I'll say, the downside was the cost, and that we all agreed it was a good idea, but there was a cost. Is this the cost that we were dealing with then, and we're taking care of that cost, or is there other cost that we still are going to run into?
So, again, I don't have the police department's budget or cost figures. My understanding was that the police and fire departments would work through the initiation of this process and determine if extra staffing would be needed. I'm not sure if that's accurate, Chief. Or
yeah, if I could just hop in on that. What I had said is that we will assign an officer to it. I fully expect that if we have the crime-free multi-housing program and strong rental ordinances, that we will see a drop in calls for service for our patrol officers. So there will be a reduction in one area, increase in another area, and then I'm going to make some adjustments and then come back to this group if we need more resources. But even so much as listening to Craig's presentation, talk about the landlord-tenant disputes. Well, who do they call now? They call 911. They call our officers. So our officers are out there mediating in a landlord-tenant dispute a lot of times, you know, which ends up being a civil dispute because it's over money, it's over the lease. You know, certainly there's times that it is warranted for officers to be out there if it gets physical, confrontational, or there's a weapon involved. But a lot of these things can be solved other resources than police. So I fully expect that we'll see a reduction in some areas and an increase in the other. I know you were talking about the cost of an officer. Initially, we're going to absorb the cost within the department, and then I'll come back to this group and just, if I need more staffing, I'll mention, you know.
Okay. So this is kind of separate than the cost we were talking about a month ago or whatever. This is, but this, you've essentially solved your cost increase with the increased fees.
Correct, Acting Mayor. We have solved the cost of the program and the inspections with the increased fees, and there is going to be some give in those fees. So, like the vehicle purchase every 7 years, that's estimate at $30,000 or $40,000. Well, that's $30,000 or $40,000 over 7 years, say $280,000. I think I'm not good at math, but $280,000 roughly that we're not spending once the first vehicle is purchased. So that's fees and funding that can be used to counteract any other fees that may come up with the police department or fire department. We can kind of navigate that as needed. And the idea is to be able to not impact the taxpayer really at all. It's to do this as a benefit to the taxpayer because so many neighbors are neighbors to rental properties, and there are significant issues there. We want to try to resolve that.
No, I like that, that right now so many of these costs are being just paid by taxpayers, and this is putting it on the actual owners or whatever. Mr. Hagan?
Yeah, I guess for me, maybe one final direction as we prepare this for the next step, public hearing, things of that nature, would be, you know, do we want to fully fund our program and include police and fire, or at least best estimate when we're starting to bring back more concrete application numbers, or do we want to just focus on, you know, the department that will have the most growth to incorporate this in, which would be community development? We can probably bring numbers for both. Craig basically has it covered for just the community development costs, but if you want us to see what it's like to try to cover costs for PD and fire.
Well, I think we should understand what all of the costs are. I guess I don't personally probably feel that we could increase our fees to cover them, I'm guessing. But if we're going to make decisions, I'd rather know all of the components rather than making three separate decisions adding on to each other.
I agree.
If
I may, Acting Mayor, if we can build in a little bit of reserve for that next purchase 7 years, I mean, that kind of thinking too, maybe. I don't know if there's room in it with the numbers that we have today, but.
May I respond?
Go ahead.
I do believe that we have a lot of flexibility in the numbers, and I do believe we can put some reserves in there. I'm not a financier, so. But I believe based on the numbers, because I did put them higher than expected, I based things such as salary on what my salary is, and the thought would be that somebody getting hired would probably be at a lesser step than I am, so there's lesser benefit costs, so there's a lesser cost in that hiring of an inspector. The vehicle fees, you know, that's once every 7 years. And in talking with the fire department and Inspector Chris Wise, there's not going to be really an added increase in their duties. They still inspect all multifamily buildings for fire code as we speak. The only thing that we would ask him to do is participate in the monthly meetings that we hold for property owners to help with fire prevention information, as we would ask the police department to participate in to talk about crime reduction, as I would participate in as part of my normal course of duty. So it would really be just scheduling their time. He has said that there's not really an increase in staffing needs because it's not impacting what they would do as the fire department. But they are going to be part of this as a team because we work together.
That's good.
All right. So it sounds like we're indicating we're on the right track. Have more tenants come back, but also understand the other costs involved with the kind of free multi-housing and inspections. Anything else to add, or we good? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess just another comment, but, whatever it was, 6-8 years ago when we put the $25 fee in, I mean, we went from nothing to something that was really like a registration, like it said. It wasn't program like this. Now that's part of what we said, is we didn't want to be Coon Rapids and have an entire, but it seems like things have changed and it's kind of times.
Since Deborah's time constraints, do we want to move up the litigation that we could do like the citizen survey after if we need to or not?
I mean, the citizen survey for me, 5 minutes.
I said two last time.
Two? I'm okay with two.
I think we can probably get them.
Okay.
We'll talk quick.
All right, so we'll do the citizen survey.
citizen survey. It historically has been every 2 years, beginning in about 2013 per survey of 2014. Skipped a year, got delayed a little bit throughout that COVID deal. We did not budget for it in 2022. So reached out and just got an updated quote. That quote came in to match a very similar survey to what we've done in the past at $20,800. This year we budgeted $15,000. The nice thing is they said that they would spread that out over 2 years to kind of match our two-year cycle. And then the other big difference from the last survey we did versus this one, it would actually be targeted to more residents. So what they'll do is they'll target certain residents, send them direct mailers, as well as create a general link where we could put that in the Ramsey resident out on social media, things of that nature. So a little bit more targeted mailer, hopefully get a little bit higher response rate from that. Those targeted mailers would be a unique link for that household. So I guess short answer is, do we want to move forward? I would bring forward the contract structured in a way where we would pay for that $20,800 over 2 years and adjust budget next year to make up the difference.
We all want to do a survey. Ms. Musgrove.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I say that we don't do the survey this year, that we budget for it next, well, however we can do the budgeting. That's my two cents on it. I think that we can still get resident information. I think we hear from our residents quite often. So that's my thought.
All right, so purely budgetary reasons.
Yes, okay. For budgetary
and
reasons.
In 2 years, are you suggesting consider it in three?
Yeah.
All right. Other thoughts? Mayor?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. You know what? I would be supportive of doing the survey again this year. I think having the statistical data to be able to compare every couple of years is important. We've been getting a lot of good information for it. I know we've tried in the past to just let it be people go online and good, but we have not had good participation with that. So I would be in support of going for the survey, especially if we can spread it out over 2 years on the payments.
Ms. Howell?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yeah, I would concur with Councilmember Musgrove. I think we have some big issues like roads, which we're kind of tackling. That's been a big issue for a lot of residents. So I think finding ways that we can cut some costs in the budget would be great, even if it's $20,000. So I would be fine with skipping it this year.
Mr. Speck?
I like the idea of the survey. I think we can keep it, you know, the even years. Just knowing we skipped one due to COVID, pick it up again next year, you know, then 24, 26, 28, et cetera, like that. That was my initial gut thought, too. It seems like we're kind of forcing it in, you know, and I think by next year we'll have more stuff done and get a better feel for how people are feeling about things, which is in the influx. Go ahead.
So if I may, just so we understand timing, the survey would typically be done in the fall. So the 2023 survey would likely go out in September. 2024 would be September 24th. Just making sure we all understand that time frame. The last one was done late 20, received by council early 21.
Right.
Okay.
I agree.
All right. Well, sounds like the consensus is we hold off a year.
Budget for next year. That's what
right.
I'm hearing.
All right, let's just skip to the attorney-client privilege discussion. So
we have to turn the recording.
Yes, we have to stop the recording.
So let's hold a moment while we get to our client privilege discussion.
Do we need to modify the ordinance or anything for this?
Sorry. You
say it again?
Well, you announce why?
Just announce we're going into a private session.
Yeah, so Steph, hold on. You want to give a quick spiel on what's going on, or do you want to? We're going into closed session.
Go ahead.
Okay. So we are about to go into closed session pursuant to Minnesota Statute Section 13D.05, Subdivision 3B, under attorney-client privilege discussion to discuss a litigation case of PSD Holdings LLC and Flip 2 LLC versus the City of Ramsey.
And we're clearing out online too?
Yep. Ryan, can I just push pause?
Hit the stop button.